Welcome to Legal Listening, where audio obiter is our thing. We're Carly and Zach, and we're so glad you're here with us today. Hey, just dropping in to say we're now on Patreon. If you want to support the project, head on over to patreon.com/legallistening, where you can unlock some fun bonus content with me, Zach, and some special guests. Thanks so much for all your support. So today on the podcast, we are again venturing into new territory with the 2021 Ontario Court of Appeal reference decision of Ree Williams. So this is a review to the ANCA from an Ontario Review Board decision, which is a board that deals with findings coming out of not criminally responsible findings in a criminal context. So this is sort of new territory for us. We're really getting into sort of mental health adjudicative tribunal law, which I know is something we've wanted to do for quite some time. And we're very excited to bring you this decision. So I know this was included last month in our little legal summaries because Sarah Little did summarize this case previously. But Zach, what do we know about this one?
Right. So to kind of give everyone a little more context, this is kind of a very difficult area of law to really break down and explain. But effectively, when somebody's found not criminally responsible, it deals with the mental health aspect and the mental well-being and the mental capacity to commit crimes. So the review board is an administrative tribunal set up to deal with these matters. So bringing it back to this case, that's kind of like my shotgun version of what the ORB does. And again, this is not an area of law that I know very much about beyond my 1L reading of it in crim law. But anyways, back to the discussion. This one deals a lot with the impacts of COVID, the impacts of COVID that it has on this individual, Mr. Williams, what the review board steps that it took, and how ANCA comes down on the review board for the way the review board handled what the hospital was saying could and couldn't be done. Because as a aspect of coronavirus and the COVID pandemic, I believe they're not doing community...
It was like housing assessments.
Yes, thank you. It's on the tip of my tongue. But yes, it was an issue of housing assessment. And if I remember correctly, an individual for Mr. Williams brings a handwritten note indicating that Mr. Williams can live with this person. And the review board, as far as I can remember, they throw this out. And the Court of Appeal is less than pleased with that choice, to put it nicely.
Yes. So this is certainly, I would say, a pretty significant decision in terms of how the board is supposed to be handling evidence from a hospital. So, you know, Mr. Williams had been found NCR back in 2011. So he's obviously been in the system for some time. And so he got to his sort of annual review before the board. And at this time, the hospital wasn't doing any, you know, internal community housing assessments, right? So they weren't going into the community to figure out places where Mr. Williams could live because of COVID. So then he had two people who were willing he could live with. And, you know, the hospital said, well, we can't do any of that stuff because of COVID, so he has to stay in the facility. And, you know, given sort of the scary spreadability of COVID, the facility was obviously on very restrictive lockdowns during this time. So, you know, he's giving up a lot of his agency by staying in the facility. And the Ontario Court of Appeal was very unimpressed with sort of the way in which this played out in real time. And they, you know, they said that the convenience of the hospital isn't the test on these issues. That's not the paramount concern. Our paramount concern is not what is easiest for the hospital. And they, you know, they brought up many issues, one of which is the note that you mentioned, how, you know, and, you know, we were chatting before, you know, the idea that something is a handwritten note was like, oh, well, it's no good because it's handwritten. It's like, it's like pretty nonsensical, even from an evidentiary perspective, especially if, you know, the people who wrote the note were available to authenticate the document. Like, it seems like nuts to me.
Yeah, and it's just like a fun, friendly reminder that the common law system we use in Ontario and in parts of Canada comes from the common law system used in England, which dates literally back to the medieval period, where they didn't even have the printing press.
Yeah.
So to somehow indicate that something is handwritten is of less authenticity, like unable to authenticate it in the same way something could be typewritten from a printer. I mean,
yeah. Or the idea that it was somehow like less, I don't know. Anyway, the Anka was very unimpressed with this, especially considering, you know, I think they said at one point in the decision, like, look, like, you're giving all this leeway to the hospital because of COVID, but you're not giving any leeway to, like, individuals who may, I don't know, maybe they're working from home and they don't have a printer. Like, I don't know. You're not giving any leeway to people, to the people in the community because of COVID, but you're going to give all this leeway to the hospital. I don't know. It's, I, like Zach, had only really been exposed to this sort of stuff from my time in law school very briefly. So I was pretty unfamiliar. And this was definitely an interesting and very topical decision. And it's a really, really good one. It's not terribly long. And it's a very good one if you want to sort of wet your teeth in the framework of how this board works, how boards interact with hospitals, and how the Anka is saying they should. So really cool stuff. We're really glad to start getting this different content on the pod. And we hope you enjoy.
Ree Williams, Court of Appeal for Ontario. Heard February 5th, 2021 by video conference. On appeal from the disposition of the Ontario Review Board, dated May 27, 2020, with reasons dated May 27, 2020. Appeal Justice Nordheimer. Mr. Williams appeals from the disposition of the Ontario Review Board that continued the detention order against him. The appellant submits that the board erred in not awarding a conditional discharge. For the following reasons, I would allow the appeal and direct a conditional discharge. The board found that the appellant poses a significant threat to the safety of the public. The sole issue on appeal is whether that risk can be adequately addressed through the imposition of a conditional discharge rather than a detention order. The appellant has been under the auspices of the board since January 2012. He is currently 33 years old. In 2009, the appellant was charged with certain robberies and related offenses. On December 22, 2011, he was found not criminally responsible, NCR, with respect to these offenses. The appellant was admitted to the Center for Addiction and Mental Health in a psychotic state. He was declared incapable of consenting to treatment. A substitute decision maker was appointed. Once the appellant received medication, there was a noticeable improvement in his mental state, and, after dose increases, he was free of psychotic symptoms. Over the years, the appellant has experienced certain setbacks in terms of his treatment. He has also had some issues regarding his use of cannabis and cocaine, issues that appear to continue. However, for at least the past 5 years, there have been few behavioral problems, and the ones that have occurred have been minor in nature. In January 2019, the appellant was discharged into the community, but he remained under a detention order. He was discharged into the home of his then-girlfriend and her parents. Mr. Williams' girlfriend was nearly full term in her pregnancy with their son at the time of discharge. Mr. Williams' son was born on January 17, 2019. On March 2, 2019, the appellant had a verbal argument with his girlfriend and as a result left her residence. Notably, however, the appellant returned to the hospital as he knew that he had to inform the hospital of his absence from the residence. The appellant's readmission to hospital was a short one. He was able to resolve the differences in his relationship and return to his girlfriend's home on March 21, 2019. Pursuant to his annual disposition review hearing on April 1, 2019, the board issued a disposition dated April 11, 2019, maintaining the appellant on a general detention order with community living. On December 2, 2019, the appellant readmitted himself to hospital because he no longer wished to be in a relationship with his girlfriend. The appellant's detention in hospital became markedly more restrictive in March 2020 as a result of hospital-wide COVID policies and restrictions. As of March 12, 2020, the appellant lost all of his indirectly supervised and community privileges. He was only allowed to access the secure yard on hospital grounds, while accompanied, for 30 minutes up to 6 times a day. The appellant was otherwise restricted to his unit. No one was allowed to visit the hospital, which meant that the appellant had not been able to see his 18-month-old son or his mother from mid-March up until the date of the hearing. At his review hearing in May 2020, the appellant sought to be released so that he could live in the community. He offered the homes of both his mother and a friend as 2 places at which he could live. The hospital felt that the appellant should only live in a place that provided supportive services. The preferred location, from the hospital's perspective, was Baldwin House, but it was not accepting new patients because of COVID-19. The hospital itself was not conducting assessments of potential alternative living places, also because of COVID-19. As a result, the appellant was left in limbo, because while the hospital would have agreed with him living in the community if they could approve the living arrangements, the hospital was not conducting any such assessments. The hospital also resisted a conditional discharge on the basis that, if the appellant stopped taking his medication, he might experience a rapid decompensation, and the hospital would not be able to take action to bring him back to the hospital in a sufficiently short time frame. The board accepted the hospital's position. They rejected the appellant's request for a conditional discharge. In doing so, however, they made significant errors, which resulted in their decision being unreasonable. First, the board concluded that the appellant's stay in the community was not successful. That finding is not borne out by the evidence. Indeed, the evidence suggests the opposite. There were no apparent problems while the appellant was living in the community. Indeed, as noted above, when problems developed between the appellant and his girlfriend, the appellant returned to the hospital. Second, is that the board made no inquiries regarding the hospital's stated position that it was not conducting any housing assessments because of COVID-19. The board did not inquire into why such assessments were not being conducted in any form, nor did the board inquire how long it would be before the hospital resumed doing assessments. The appellant was simply left to wait. The board has a responsibility to make such inquiries, to search out and consider evidence favoring the NCR accused absolute discharge or release subject to the minimum necessary restraints. The board does not fulfill its responsibilities by simply accepting what the hospital says. If the time frame for resuming assessments was uncertain, then the board ought to have adjourned the appellant's hearing for a short period so the matter could be revisited with updated information. None of this was done. I would add that I do not accept that it was appropriate for the hospital to simply cease undertaking such assessments, with the result that individuals continue to be detained when they might otherwise be able to live in the community. More importantly, the board ought not to have accepted that situation, nor should it have made a disposition on that basis. Doing so is a failure of the board to ensure that the least onerous and least restrictive disposition is made. Third, I am also troubled by the attitude that the board took to the 2 offers of housing for the appellant. Both offers were contained in short handwritten notes addressed to the board. The board's reaction was to characterize these offers as having been presented in a very rudimentary and unprofessional format. That characterization is not only unfair, it fails to properly account for the lack of resources available to the appellant and the restrictions that the pandemic has imposed on people generally. Restrictions, I note, that the board was content to allow the hospital to rely on for its cessation of assessments. Fourth, the board accepts that there was a need for the hospital to be able to move quickly if the appellant suffered a rapid decline in his condition. However, there was no evidence before the board that any such decline had occurred in the past. Indeed, the evidence of the appellant's psychiatrist was uncertain on this very point. When asked about this by the board, the psychiatrist said, in part, quote, "I wouldn't necessarily be certain that he would voluntarily come in to advise if he was, for example, starting to use substances, and advise to come in just to break that cycle or stabilize, because often, as I mentioned before, at least initially, Mr. Williams will deny substance use or what have you. So I can't really imagine a scenario where if he's presented with that, then he would just say, okay, I will voluntarily come into the hospital. But again, that's speculation, and I don't know until that necessarily happens, but," end quote. In this court's experience, the resort to detention orders as being necessary on the basis of a need for quick action is often relied upon by hospitals and the board as justifying the rejection of a request for a conditional discharge. In considering this issue, I am mindful of the problems with the Mental Health Act and the restrictions on its use to address these situations. It would appear to be long past time for the government to review the operation of the Mental Health Act with respect to these and other issues that have arisen in its practical application in this context. However, those failings cannot be permitted to justify the continued detention of individuals on the basis of expediency. Something more must be shown, and none is in this case. As this court said in Ree Valdez at paragraph 21, quote, given the least onerous and least restrictive test, something more is required than mere convenience to the hospital, end quote. I would add on this point that in his evidence before the board, the appellant's psychiatrist said that if the appellant did begin to decompensate, the Mental Health Act would likely be sufficient to manage the risk that the appellant would pose to the public. The psychiatrist's concern was that the Mental Health Act might not be sufficient earlier in the process where changes might be more subtle. That does not change the fact that while a detention order might be a better solution from the hospital's perspective, it is not the least onerous and least restrictive disposition. It must also be remembered that the appellant, as with any NCR accused who is conditionally discharged, is subject to the conditions imposed by the board. The conditions imposed are enforceable under the criminal code. In particular, section 672.91 of the code allows for the arrest of a conditionally discharged NCR accused for the breach or anticipated breach of a condition, and sections 672.91 sub 1 sub b and 672.93 sub 2 allow the board to specify the place where the accused is to be returned. Consequently, I would allow the appeal and replace the board's disposition with a discharge on the following conditions, all of which were proposed by the appellant to the board. 1. You will reside with Laura Loffman. 2. You will report to your clinical team as required. 3. You will abstain from the non-medical use of drugs. 4. You will submit urine samples for the purpose of drug testing as directed by your clinical team. 5. With your consent, you will take all psychiatric medications as directed by your doctor. 6. Upon notice being given to you, orally or in writing, by the person in charge of St. Joseph's Healthcare Hamilton West 5th Campus, you will immediately submit to attendance at and for readmission to the hospital. And 7. You will notify the board and your clinical team upon any changes of address. I understand that the appellant is scheduled for his annual review on May 27, 2021. I wish to make it clear that this decision does not alter the need for that hearing. It is to proceed as planned. If any issues arise regarding the above conditions, they can be addressed before the board, at that annual review, or earlier if required. Released February 12, 2021.
Thanks for the listen, friend. I hope you're able to enjoy that case and learn something new from it. Legal Listening is founded by Zach Battiston and Carly Lyons. It is hosted by Zach Battiston, Carly Lyons, and you, our listeners. Executive produced by Zach Battiston, Carly Lyons, and Anthony Radomile. Audio engineering by Anthony Radomile. Graphic design by Julie Lundy. Check her out online at julielundyart.com. And music done by Matt Radomile at radandkel.com. At Legal Listening, we're always open to new ideas, suggestions, and of course, guest readers. Check us out on Twitter at Legal Listening or online at legallistening.com. Legal Listening, where audio obiter is our thing. We'll catch you in the next case. Bye now.